Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So we're recording this the Friday after Thanksgiving. Alex and I are based in the U.S., so we love the pod. We love doing shows for you guys. So here we are after Thanksgiving. We have a fun show for you. I did record an awesome interview on Wednesday with an excellent guest, Richard Hall. We didn't focus on one specific team. We just went around Serie A, so it'll kind of be a nice refresher on what's going on in the league. Of course, it's with the weekend coming and there are games. There's no international breaks. We have Thousand Name on deck. We have some intriguing games in Serie A, so we'll hear his picks and I will make mine. We have to ask our dear friend Alex Goldberg on how poor Juve was against Chelsea, and I'll give you a best and worst case scenario for Juve in the coming months, and you guys can pick which one of the two is more likely. I feel like sometimes I'm too cynical and negative on Juve, so I'm going to give you both sides and you can pick which one is more likely. But before we get to all that, we had a very intriguing sliding door moment in Calcio, and really perfect for our podcast because obviously we're Serie A based, but we try to make the league attractive to people that maybe don't follow it regularly. Maybe you tuned in here for transfers or to hear about a coach or a manager heading to the PL from Serie A. But we had a very intriguing sliding door moment yesterday. And I thought the timing was just absolutely incredible. Like, you couldn't make it up. So we had the news of Man United signing Rognich, which kind of came out of the blue to replace Ole, kind of an interim role that might become permanent. And at the same time, we had the news of Milan extending Pioli's contract. Now, if you're not in the Serie A world, you're probably wondering, what is the connection? I tweeted this and I left it vague on purpose, and I was very curious to see the reaction. But it wasn't long ago that Rognich was very close to going to Milan, and there were some Milan fans that were like, you know what? As good as Pioli's been, maybe we want this guy. So it's intriguing that both these things happened at the same time. So, Alex, I know yesterday you were trying to catch up with the fam. A very well-deserved day off social media. I'm sure, though, you probably heard about it, even though you weren't actively on the platform. And I know you're always trying to catch up. So what was your reaction to the Man United going with Rognich and appointing him out of the blue?
Well, I don't love it because he's competent. He obviously has done stuff in the game that is impressive. And I think what I mean by that the most is he's mentored guys who we now view as really top managers, like Thomas Tuchel, Jurgen Klopp, I think Nagelsmann. So you can see a bit of his DNA in football, David, which probably as a Chelsea fan makes me a little less than enthused because I'd like someone clueless, obviously, in charge of Manchester United. And the whole, okay, he'll be interim and then he'll have a consultant role after. I'm still a little clouded on the details, but that seems to be the base of it. That honestly seems like a good way to go because then they're getting someone in an interim role who still cares more about the long term than most interim guys would, if you know what I mean. So sometimes you just bring in an interim guy to be an interim guy and to just keep you afloat. But if that guy also is still going to have a role with the club and still going to be part of making decisions even after his interim role, then it's probably just going to mean that much more in the meantime to him. So, yeah, I don't love it because I feel like Manchester United have a guy now who's just a lot more serious. You can take him a lot more seriously. But I'm not afraid. I'm really not, because I'm not sure how much of a top manager he actually is, David. I heard an interesting comparison. I heard that Rognich to Tuchel and Klopp specifically almost could be like Bielsa to Pep these days. And, you know, I don't want to now start counting my eggs before they hatch and say Rognich's not going to be anywhere good enough of a coach compared to Tuchel or Klopp. But I kind of like the Bielsa to Pep comparison. I do, because Bielsa's this guy who also has, revolutionized football in some ways to some people. I think he's overrated, but he definitely is a bit of a pioneer of sorts. But the master is not always better than the teacher. So we know Pep obviously has a much more impressive CV than Bielsa. And the way Tuchel is performing as a manager, and we might talk about that in a little bit if we bring Juve up, and obviously what Klopp's done in the Premier League, just because they may have once viewed Rangnick as their idol or at least mentor does not mean that now he's coming in and he's taking charge of the biggest team in the world and he's now going to be better than them. But listen, it makes Manchester United a lot more competent, in my opinion. It does, because I actually think it's really important to bring in a guy in an interim role mid-season if they have, obviously, like I said at the beginning of this answer, something in it for the long haul. But even just an interim guy with nothing in it for the long haul, their one sole objective is the interim. And that's what Manchester United needs to focus on right now. They have too good of a team to really even focus on the future. They have to focus on the now. They didn't acquire Ronaldo for the future. So, yeah, they may have some young players, but they have to focus on the now and at minimum get top four, and he'll help with that. In fact, it's a huge reason why I wasn't even that. I mean, I liked Tuchel. I did. But I wasn't gung-ho on Tuchel being the man when Lampard was let go, because it didn't sound like he'd be an interim guy. And I kind of wanted an interim guy, to be perfectly honest, because I wanted a guy whose sole objective was just to salvage the season. Now, Tuchel got that classic now, I'm calling it classic now, David, but that 18-month contract, which we're seeing a lot more now. And that almost felt like an interim contract, because as he said, hey, if I don't perform well, I might be gone before the 18 months. So it kind of had that effect where right away he had to kind of zero in and keep Chelsea alive, and he obviously did way more than that. So listen, I think for a club that's not that well run these days, David, they have a lot of non-footballing people making footballing decisions. I think they made a good footballing decision. That's my opinion. So I'm interested to hear anyone's take about that whole Bielsa to Pep, Rangnick to Tuchel and Klopp comparison, because I'm sure it has some faults as well. But, you know, maybe it's not that outlandish if you kind of get the outline of that comparison. So, David, I want to ask, I mean, Rangnick is obviously a guy we've spoken about plenty on this podcast. He was very close to taking over Milan a while back. Are you surprised at how well things have gone for Milan, specifically sticking to Pioli?
Yeah, first of all, I thought you did a great job breaking down the decision. I have to say I was surprised and positively surprised. I mean, I'm not a fan of a team in the PL, so I'm a little more neutral, but obviously I have a lot of Man United fans who follow me, a lot of questions. I am surprised because I predicted all along that, never mind Conte, it might come to the point that Man United would appoint someone that would have been worse than picking up Ranieri, who I think would have been a really good interim, the more I think about it, in the short term. So I think you hit the nail on the head. This strikes me as a footballing decision, and it's not just, you know, marketing and all. What sticks out to me, it isn't just a decision on someone that has a Man United DNA or a connection to Ferguson, which, listen, Ferguson era, fantastic, but that was a totally different time in football than now. And I think the nostalgia that at Man United was really not helping the club. So this is really the opposite of a nostalgia hiring, the opposite of a marketing hire. So listen, I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in Rangnick. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in exactly what Man United needs. But, you know, when it comes to decision-making and thinking things through there, I feel like I have a little bit of something to say, and I think that was a really good decision. But let's go back to the Milan aspect, because this is an amazing sliding door moment. And again, I think the odds of Pioli signing an extension, which became official today, right before we started recording the podcast, as Rangnick goes to Man United, is really pretty incredible. Even think of it from Rangnick's point of view. About a year and a half ago, you know, he's close to joining Milan in rebuild, owned by the Elliott Fund, a club that's trying to be financially sustainable, trying to, you know, with young players. And Rangnick made a lot of sense for what that vision of Milan. And then he ends up going to Man United, as you point out, a club that just signed Ronaldo. So even just from his perspective, I find it incredibly fascinating. But back to Milan, you know, we often say that sometimes the best decisions club make are transfers you don't make, or decisions that you put off and you're like, huh, you know, maybe I'll keep this manager another year. And when I think of Milan, we've talked a lot about it on the pod. The thing that really sticks out to me is the reason Milan is so good this season is the organic growth on the team, because they lost key starters in the summer, Donnarumma, Çalhanoğlu for free, but it was the organic growth of the players. Sure, signing Maignan was a great, great signing to replace Donnarumma, but they were also able to be without him for a decent amount of time. And I think the reason Milan have been this good is the improvements of players like Brahim Diaz, Tonali, Leao. We've talked about it at length on the podcast. We were like, listen, Calabria took a big leap last season. Which players on Milan are going to take that same leap this season? And we saw the answer. And I think Pioli deserves a ton of credit for that. I think Milan have an identity. They play well with kind of that 4-2-3-1 under Pioli. That's been a very successful formation for them, but it's the improvement of the players. I mean, I was kind of surprised Milan fans were so excited that Brahim Diaz was coming back on a two-year loan deal, seeing his, you know, he had like 4 goals and 2 assists the year before, and he's been sensational this season. Leao, I've always questioned his mentality, has been much more engaged than playing well. Tonali, look, Juve and Roma would kill for Kumbula and Kulusevski to take the leap that Tonali did. All three were signed for big transfer fees. And the one that panned out is Tonali with Pioli. It hasn't been, you know, with Allegri and Mourinho, the big name managers. And I remember in the summer when, because, you know, it was a disappointing summer in Serie A for player movement, right? We saw so many huge stars leave, but it was very exciting for managers, even Lazio going with someone with Sarri. And I remember in the summer, there were some Milan fans saying, huh, you know, we're stuck with Pioli and these other teams are improving. And that continuity is really what has helped Milan so much this season and the organic growth. So kudos to Pioli. You know, the other aspect, had Rangnick gone to Milan, he would have had a ton to say on personnel and signing players. Look at what a great job Maldini, Massara, and the scouting department have done finding players. Like, Rangnick would have wanted to be very involved with that sort of stuff. And we associate a lot of the rise of Milan to Maldini, and we often hear players from other teams saying, look, if Maldini starts calling you to come to Milan, it's pretty hard to say no. So just think about that sliding door moment. And I remember we had Daniele Mazzanti from Vox to Box, who's kind of become our Milan correspondent. And, you know, he's passionate, he's objective. He was very upset when Milan didn't get Rangnick. I remember we chatted with him when it seemed like he was coming, and he was very excited. He goes, oh, this is a project. I'm excited. I like Pioli, but this is a very serious thing. And Daniele now would be the first one to tell you he's so glad he was really wrong about that. And I probably would have said the same things had I been him. So an incredible sliding door moment. We don't know what Milan would look like with Rangnick, but one thing for sure is it would look very different. And I think had I told any Milan fan at the beginning of the season, after Thanksgiving in the US, Milan's going to be tied for first place and with a chance to get out of their group stage, you would have taken that in a heartbeat. Like, you would have said that even had Donnarumma stayed, no one got injured, you would have been like, that's fantastic. So that's how you know Pioli's done a fantastic job. But let's switch gear, Alex. Not too much gloating on your Chelsea side. I'm more interested in hearing your perspective on how poor Juve was in that game against Chelsea. Because when Juve beat Chelsea in Turin in the first game, I gave you a little crap because you were gloating after the draw. You were like, we got Juve. This is fine. We're going to be good. I made a little fun of you. But I got to say, after that game at Stamford Bridge, you were very wise with that. So you could gloat a little bit on Chelsea, but I'm more curious on you. Like, how surprised were you how poor Juve was? You've seen Chelsea play a lot of teams this season in the Champions League, obviously, and even in the Premier League, they've been awesome under Tuchel. Was Juve as, almost as bad as an opponent you've seen Chelsea face recently?
Well, we slapped up Norwich 7-0, so almost, but not. They were bad, David. They were bad. So yeah, I won't even really gloat about Chelsea because I don't need to tell anyone who watched that game or anyone who's been watching them lately how good they are. Chelsea are phenomenal. I think them and Bayern right now are the two most informed teams in the world. And if you want to throw Liverpool and City in as just the overall best four teams in the world, yeah, that sounds about right. So Juve just were not Juve. And I know that sounds like really simple analysis, but if you're going to look at how Juve have always been for pretty much the last decade, they always had a bit of a backbone. They were a team that was really hard to slap up, David. That phrase, slap up, I mean, I know it's not really hard-hitting analysis, but I think everybody knows what I mean by that. And they were maybe the hardest team in the world, David, for a long time to slap up. They might not have always been the best team. They were pretty high up there, but they may have been the hardest team to just slap up, just make it a game where it's over basically before it started. And honestly, once the first goal went in, I thought it was over. I know it took a little while to get the second. It wasn't until Reece James had that great goal. And that second goal was actually quite important for the standings and group stage. Like, it was really important. Chelsea scored two, so we have every chance of getting first in the group. And it's not over. Obviously, there's still one more game each for everyone to play. But once it was 1-0, you could just feel it. It was over. Juve had their tail in between their legs. And David, when you still have players out there who have been at the club for a while, I understand they had injuries and it wasn't their complete normal team. But you have Allegri. Like, you have plenty of people that have some familiarity with Juve. But don't you also kind of feel that in the very back of the Juve players' minds, they felt like, we're not even close to as good as this team? Like, I kind of felt that. I'm not saying that they gave up or anything like that, but these guys aren't stupid. They know, okay, yeah, we're just not on their level at all. And I think the third goal, right, was the perfect example. David, how many times in your, well, I can't say life, because, of course, Juve weren't always as great as they've been the last decade.
That's a long time, Alex.
So, but how many times in the last 10 years have you seen a goal like that third goal where it went from Ziyech to Loftus-Cheek, and Loftus-Cheek must have dribbled through three people right in front of the goal? Like, classic Juve? They don't allow that. A Juve player didn't get a foot on the ball. And then, of course, it goes to Hudson-Odoi, who puts it in. I mean, that was schoolboy stuff. And it just kind of made me feel that Juve were lacking belief. They kind of already knew this isn't a fair fixture. This is not a fair fight right now for us. And it's like their confidence from, what, they had a 2-0 away win to Lazio, right, last weekend? It's like,
yeah,
they didn't get confidence, or at least enough, from that or the previous leg, David, that you mentioned that was in Turin. So I think it was just a really big showcasing of not really how great Chelsea is. Yes, but we kind of already knew that. Just the lack of spine that is just not there anymore with Juventus. And I think when I know someone like Allegri's in charge, I do start to wonder, and I'm not saying they won't have good moments again with him, but I do start to wonder, is this just like Shaquille O'Neal? And I'm not saying Allegri's done like Shaq was done, but Allegri with Juve and this Juve team, is this kind of like Shaquille O'Neal just thinking that because he's still in the league, he can still be great? I kind of got that vibe, like, Allegri the second time with this Juve, who are a much worse Juve, is this going to work? So I don't want to be reactionary, because in the end, it was just one game. And who knows? Juve could still get first in the group if Chelsea don't do what they need to do against Zenit. But I felt like that game was more than a game for Juve, if you know what I mean. I mean, that was just something that would never, ever happen to them. So yeah, I felt a real, real lack of spine, David. So, I mean, I'll ask you, what is the best and worst case scenario now for Juve moving forward?
Yeah, I think it was very interesting what you said, that I think the Juve player realized what a huge gap there is now between them and Chelsea. And look, it wasn't that long ago that Juve were considered in the mix to be one of those teams that could win the Champions League, I would say, up until the second season with Ronaldo, which really wasn't that long ago. And you look at how quickly that can turn. So as I said, I think, I'm pretty aware of my biases, some of them at least. So I do realize that I pile on Juve, and I know where that comes from. You guys know I'm a big Marotta guy. I'm a big narrative guy. So it becomes very easy to feed into the narrative that everything at Juve has gone south since Marotta left. But look, I think there's a lot of truth to that. So what I'll do is I'll present you both the best and worst case scenarios as I see it for Juve first. So let's get into the negative first. Look, this match against Chelsea showed the huge gap with the European teams. They're going to get out of the group, as you mentioned. They might even finish first. Good for them. But I don't think anyone watching that group's like, okay, yeah, Juve is better than Chelsea and they can go further. So I think they're deep enough in the CL. They can play both Serie A, the CL. It won't be a huge deal there. Their depth's a little bit tricky because, you know, it's not like in the midfield, it's not like you have clear starters except for Locatelli. They're kind of interchangeable. Then you have De Ligt can rotate with Chiellini and Bonucci, assuming Chiellini's healthy. So you got some depth there. They're hurt with Danilo being out. But I don't think some other Serie A teams making it out of the group stage impacts them in Serie A. I really don't think it impacts Juve. So that's a positive there. If you want to be positive, you can say attack-wise, things have gone as poorly as they could. Morata has been in a really bad slump going recently. Kane really hasn't done much since he returned. Dybala has been battling injuries. Kulusevski has been a little bit better recently, but now it sounds like Kulusevski is being shopped a lot to try to raise funds for Vlahovic. Obviously, Vlahovic would be a huge positive for Juve, but it doesn't sound like he wants to leave in January. A lot of people have reported this. He kind of wants to finish the season at Fiorentina, and for good reason, because he's with a manager that works well for him, and he kind of wants, as he goes away to Fiorentina, say, hey, I brought you back to Europe. So I'm not sure Juve is going to be able to get Vlahovic in January. But I think if you're a Juve fan, that's probably one of the biggest causes for optimism beyond this season. Is I'm not saying Juve has Vlahovic in the bag, but they look in a really strong position. So you're like, hey, you know, building around Vlahovic, Chiesa, Locatelli, assuming De Ligt stays, not a bad nucleus there. Is there a world? I'm not counting out Juve for finishing in top four in Serie A. I think it's absolutely imperative for them to do so. I don't think the Scudetto is realistic. But is it possible Napoli or Atalanta drop off? I think Inter Milan look pretty secure for making the Champions League. Is it possible Napoli with Osimhen out? Atalanta, you know, especially if they get out of their group in the CL? Maybe. So there's a scenario where, you know, in Serie A, they've been better recently. They beat their bitter rivals, Fiorentina and Lazio. Clean sheets, important things there. So, yeah, and now they go into a stretch of games against some lower table teams. So, in theory, the schedule looks pretty good. So I think the start of the season was as horrific as it could have been for Juve. They did okay in the Champions League before Tuesday, more than okay till Tuesday. Beyond that, it's been pretty depressing. But there's a scenario where, look, it can't stay this bad. And then you're like, at some point next year, we get Vlahovic, and then at least we have a reliable goal scorer, and we're kind of on our way for the rebuild. So I would say that's the best case scenario. Let's look at the worst case scenario. We talked about the schedule being soft for Juve. Is that necessarily a good thing? We've seen how much Juve struggles against the Empoli, the Veronas of the world. These are the games where, to me, they really miss Ronaldo. Because when you were playing these teams and Ronaldo was at Juve, you were basically starting those games 1-0. Just because of what he brought to the table. Now we've seen Juve has such a hard time against the teams that close themselves up defensively. So after they play Atalanta, which won't be easy this weekend, they then have a soft schedule, but it remains to be seen if that's necessarily a good thing. Look, if you look at Juve, you could say, okay, the defense is old other than De Ligt, and De Ligt He hasn't been bad, but he also hasn't been great at Juve. For Riccardo Pratesi put it well when we talked about Juve, you would probably give De Ligt a B-, but with what you paid, you were really hoping for an A-plus from him. So the defense has question marks. Danilo's out for a while. He's been really good. I love Cuadrado, but Danilo and Cuadrado were two important players for Juve. So you have issues there. The midfield, we know, is a mess. And, you know, I got to chuckle when I read these reports. Oh, Juve is really determined now to sell the Arthur, the Ramseys, the Rabiots. Like, look, they've been wanting to sell these players forever. The question isn't so much is Juve willing to sell them, is anyone else willing to pay like Ramsey's wages or whatnot. So let's see what happens in January. I don't think someone like Witzel really moves the needle for Juve one way or the other. But the really worst case scenario for Juve, and I've said this many times, is if they don't make the Champions League. So you lose those revenues. We've talked ad nauseum about the fact that they owe around 90 million. And these are forced options to buy Chiesa, which obviously you want to keep, Locatelli, which again, you'd want to keep, and Kane, which really I'm not sure if you'd want to keep, especially at 30 million. So even though Chiesa, keeping Chiesa and Locatelli is a good thing, that's a lot of money. And that's a lot of money that probably Juve fans in their minds were kind of pegging to further reinforce the team. But that's a lot of money just to keep what you have. And then getting Vlahovic won't be cheap. It sounds like they're going to try to sacrifice Kulusevski, maybe not make a big plusvalenza on him, but at least get cash for him to finance that. So, yeah, but then you are in trouble because you've spent a lot just to keep these players and you're not in the Champions League. So is there a scenario where if Inter financial situation with ownership stabilizes, and it sounds like that's what they're saying, at least, is there a scenario where Inter goes into a run where they start winning Scudetti? Possibly. Milan certainly look like a team on the rise. So there's a world where Juve for the foreseeable future are behind those clubs. So that's the best and worst case scenario. You guys can decide which one is closer to the truth. So I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts on Alex, on the Bielsa to Pep and the best case scenario there. So let's go to someone that we always are curious to see what he has in the bag for us. And this is our Oracle, the great thousand names. So as usual, he picks three games. I'm gonna give my picks too. We'll read his picks in Italian for his fans in Italy that tune in to hear what he's up to. So first off, tomorrow, big game, Juve hosting Atalanta. Thousand names as Atalanta winning 3-0. Goals by Palomino, Demiral, and Malinowski. He says Zapata's going to miss a penalty. He says Cuadrado and Chiesa are going to be destroyed by Mele and Pezzella, the two wing backs on Atalanta. He says Allegri is toast. And against the European teams, he never wins. In Italian, Juve Atalanta 0-3, Palomino, Demiral, Malinowski. Zapata sbaglia rigore, Cuadrado e Chiesa asfaltati da Mele, Pezzella, Allegri, Cotto contro le squadre europee non vince mai. I'll tell you what, since I'm often too cynical on Juve, and you guys know I'm biased towards Atalanta, I'm going to go on the theory that Juve actually does better against the offensive-minded teams like Atalanta. So I'm actually going to surprise you guys. I'm going to go with Juve winning 1-0, and I'll give a goal to Kulusevski. So there you have it. Next up, Milan hosting Sassuolo after Pioli's extension. Thousand has Milan winning 3-0. Hat trick by Ibrahimovic. He says Dionisi is going to be made to look ridiculous. That's Sassuolo's manager. He says Pioli is going to confirm himself as the best Italian manager after Limone Inzaghi. He says he built the perfect machine and that Sassuolo still paying the disasters from the Zerbi. In Italian, Milan Sassuolo 3-0, Ibrahimovic 3 gol, Dionisi ridicolizzato, Pioli si conferma migliore allenatore italiano dopo Limone, ha costruito una macchina perfetta, Sassuolo paga ancora i disastri di De Zerbi. For Milan, really good game against Atletico. I thought Kessie was superb. Those are the games where if you wonder why he's asking for so much money and why he'd be attractive to many teams, you watch that game. We saw him play that way against Man United last year. Look, Kessie is a really, really pretty great defensive midfielder. on his day. Sassuolo been a little bit underwhelming this season. I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to have Milan winning 1-0. I will give Ibrahimovic. People really enjoyed your rant last week, Alex, and I put that in air quotes on Ibra. I have a lot of listeners in Sweden, so I'm going to pay some love to Ibrahimovic there. And last but not least,
hey, if we have Napoli, listeners in Sweden, I love Magda Eriksson, the female footballer who plays for Chelsea. So go Sweden.
There you go. I like it. All right. Next up, Napoli Lazio. Sarri's return to Napoli. He has a 1,000 has Insigne scoring the game winner. And he says Spalletti is going to make up for the horrible look he had in Russia where he didn't shake the manager's hand by humiliating Sarri. He says his age is going to be ridiculous. He was on Napoli before going to Lazio. And he says Lotito's faking about sacking Sarri. I've been talking all about how Sarri's about to sign an extension. He says the San Paolo is going to be moved, thinking of Maradona's passing, which was already a year yesterday, and even Insigne is going to cry. I'll read it in Italian. Napoli Lazio 1-0. Insigne, Spalletti si riscatta dopo la figuraccia in Russia umiliando Sarri. Esas ridicolo, Lotito pensa all'esonero. San Paolo commosso per il ricordo di Diego piange anche Immobile. Oh, by the way, yeah, that Diego, I thought Napoli did a great job paying tribute to Maradona yesterday. Unbelievable stat that I read on Twitter that Maradona's passed away. It's been a year and no number 10 has scored in Napoli Stadium since. Pretty wild. So Napoli-Lazio. Lazio lost to Juve. Napoli lost to Inter. They're without Osimhen. I'm going to go draw. I'm going to go 1-1. I'll go Mertens and I'll go Milinkovic-Savic there. So as always, thank you so much, Thousand Names, for your game picks. You always keep me on pins and needles. Okay, before we get to Richard Hall, and then we're going to close on a few movie reviews because I've seen a lot of good movies recently. We're going to do a special part of the pod for patrons. If you enjoy listening to the pod on Friday, we have one on Tuesday as well, just for patrons. We have different tiers. We have awesome articles. I'm about to post a great one from Enrico Passarella. I'm going to write their new article this week as well. You get to ask questions. We answer them on Tuesday and Friday. It's a great community, and we support an awesome charity, the Insuperabili in Italy, which run culture academies for kids with disabilities. Okay, guys, we wanted to have a special guest for the day after Thanksgiving here in the U.S. We are recording this on Wednesday, so before Inter plays in the Champions League, but we are going to focus much more on Serie A with our next guest, a regular on Calcioland, the great Richard Hall. He's the chief correspondent for Football Italia. He writes now for Fiorentina's official site in English. Great crew of guys over there. And since he's been on the pod, you guys have always known him as the creator of Gentleman Ultra, one of my favorite sites covering calcio. So, Richard, it's always wonderful to chat calcio with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thank you, David. It's always so good to be here. Just really excited to talk about this season. There's so much going on.
There sure is. Okay, so let's talk about Inter. And again, we're recording this before the Champions League game, but again, we're looking more at Serie A. So look, you know, I thought the last weekend was obviously crucial for Inter. I feel like maybe this was a momentum shifter. Milan loses, they beat Napoli. Look, I've felt for a while that Inter are the best team in Serie A. It's not just because they've won it. I just look at the squad and they check a lot of boxes for me. Do you feel this way as well, especially after this weekend?
If you'd have asked me that at the beginning of the season, I would probably say no. Because, you know, obviously the Hakimi going, Lukaku, this financial situation, is it, you know, how will some of the Inzaghi cope? It was a lot of questions asked, but Beppe Marotta has been brilliant again, working well with Simone Inzaghi. The people he's brought in have all worked, in my opinion. And so now, when you look at the squad, taking into account what Simone Inzaghi has done tactically, which I think, you know, he's kept a lot of that pace, power, and counter-attacking spirit that they had under Conte, but just refined it, and it just looks a little bit more cultured at the moment. And so, yeah, you know, for me, Inter are standing up to some big tests, which is key. Whether it's winning or drawing in certain circumstances, but they're looking good. And you're right. When I look through the squad, you know, when at the beginning of the season, to compare Inter to anyone, I look right at Juventus and I look at Napoli normally, actually, and who both got good, very good squads. But for me, yeah, Inter are looking as though that Carrera-Lautaro partnership could really form in the future. Dzeko's been brilliant. You know, I'd like to see a bit more out of Dumfries, but, you know, all the way through, it's looking good. And when you look at what they're trying to do with Unana potentially in the January window to compete with Handanovic, everything seems to be going in the right direction. So, yeah, I think it's interesting this season because normally it's just Juventus and then the rest. But now you can look around with confidence and you can actually have this discussion, which is the point.
Well said. Well said. So let's talk a little bit about Dzeko because I find him really fascinating. Look, he's been linked to Inter for a long time. I think a lot of people, when Lukaku was sold and he came in, were like, well, who else is coming to? We'll get to Duvan Zapata in a second, but he's been nothing short of brilliant. And I think, you know, there really is an Inter when he's on the pitch, and when he's not, they just play differently. I feel he controls possession in the opponent's half as well as really anyone in Serie A still to this day. So I'm curious, do you feel like he's been in the first third of the season? You know, to me, he's in the conversation for Serie A MVP. Do you think Inter needs him to be this good for the next two-thirds of the season? Or do you think Lautaro, Correa, and the rest of the supporting cast can overcome if he has a slight dip? Because at his age, I think it's pretty hard to expect him to keep this going quite this consistently.
Yeah, true. I mean, for me, Dzeko has been a revelation because, yes, of course, Inter have wanted him for a long time. And, you know, you can look at him now and think, oh, why didn't he sign him 3-4 years ago? But, you know, when Lukaku left, that was a huge hole. And it was like, you know, if you imagine a river with a bridge across it and it falls down, you know, how are you going to cross that bridge, get that gap? And Dzeko was just meant to be that bridging gap for when Inter's finances are sorted, when things can, you know, get back on track and they can look at their future forward options. And that's still the case. But it's like, rather than have this little wooden bridge, it's like we replaced in with the Golden Gate, because he's just that good. He's just that spectacular. And to have that sort of player to be able to score as consistently as he has, you know, it's a massive bonus because he's intelligent. He doesn't need to have the pace as such. You know, he involves himself in the play in so many different ways and potentially one of the most underrated strikers of the past 10 years. Massively.
Oh, without a doubt.
Absolutely. He just doesn't get the credit for his ability. So, for me, it's just such a lucky break for Inter to have him, because I think he will supply the goals this season. I think if Inter use him intelligently, which they are doing at the moment, and they can get the form out of Carrera, then, you know, you're looking at that situation, you know, that if Carrera picks up, Dzeko can be used even more intelligently. So, yeah, I mean, it's a win-win for Inter on this one. I mean, obviously, the long-term future of who they're going to replace him with is another story, but and that's for another day. But for this season, I think he will continue to score, probably not as regularly because I think they'll use him in different ways.
Fair. Let's talk about another player that I think is in the conversation for Serie A MVP, and this is Osimhen. I thought even when he was still on the pitch, we saw on Napoli's goal, like how much of an impact he has even when he doesn't score. And obviously that injury is a really, really tough one. He's going to be out for a while. I assume it's not going to be a very easy recovery. Do you think Napoli are doomed without Osimhen? Or is this maybe a little bit how Milan fans thought, okay, the Scudetto race is over with Maignan's injury and they're still there? Do you think Napoli can somehow sustain it like Milan did? Or do you think it's just not possible seeing the impact that Osimhen has?
He does have a massive impact. I mean, you look at that squad, you know, the Napoli squad and how they've been performing this season. A lot of it has been down to his abilities. And, you know, if he's out for 2 to 3 months, that's a big hit at the time, you know, it's a very busy time in a season. So it will affect them. There's no doubt about that. I think I'm going to actually answer your earlier question again about the best squad in Serie A, about being Inter, because I think Inter are now in that fortunate situation where even if Lautaro got injured, you had Carrera and Dzeko, it would be a big blow, but they would cope. You know, you look all the way through, you could take Dumfries out, you can take Perisic out, even though he's been spectacular. Potentially, maybe Handanovic would be a bit of a problem. But, you know, all in all, they can replace them. When I look at Osimhen coming out of the Napoli squad, you know, you look around and you think, okay, well, do they turn directly to Dries Mertens and ask him to roll back the years once again? Will he be able to do that? Yes, but not consistently, because, you know, I just don't think he's the type of game he plays would allow him to do that. And then you're looking at the likes of Petagna and you're thinking, you know, has he got the... Does he fit that game plan? You know, not the fact of, is he good enough? It's just a fact of, does he fit exactly what Napoli want to do? And again, you know, you look at that and think, potentially not. So I think it is a problem for them. I think this is where Spalletti's going to have to prove his worth and get very creative now and really see what he can do. And again, you know, it's about probably utilising the likes of Lozano and Insigne in the best way to look for the goals elsewhere. I always remember when Higuain left Napoli and said to the team, look, everyone else has got to stand up and produce the goals. I think that's what they've got to do. I think Milan may also have a bit of a problem because with Maignan going, and they were so happy, obviously, that his performances were not allowing them to miss Donnarumma as much as they thought they might. For him to go out, look, I mean, I think that Tatarusanu is one of those goalkeepers who you're going to watch him one week and he's going to be absolutely spectacular. But then there's just that part of his game that will cost every so often. And I think when Milan are wanting to challenge for the Scudetto, you can't have that. You can't have that, you know, 5-6 switch offs a year that cost you points. So I think that Milan here as well, you know, I think it could cost them both a little bit. It gives Inter a massive opportunity. And I know it sounds bizarre, but Juventus as well. I think that, you know, slowly, we might see a bit of a catch-up. So, look, this is why it's so interesting this season, because it's so hard to put your finger on who could actually challenge for the title. Because, as I said, you know, there are two big blows for Milan and Napoli. And I'm going to be really interested to see just how they cope with them. Although Milan at the moment seems to be coping the better, but I think long term it could be a problem.
Yeah, I hear you. But I think, look, you know, Maignan's kind of getting on his way back. I think if you told the Milan fan on the day that Maignan got injured that, you know, they'd still be tied in first place, I think they would have taken it. But you're right, Tatarusanu definitely came back to bite them against Fiorentina. Let's talk a little bit more about Milan, because I think the reason Milan have been this good, certainly Maignan has helped a lot, is the organic growth, is the improvements of the players on the squad. And I think Pioli deserves a lot of credit for that. So I want to ask you, who surprised you more this season between Tonali, Leao, or Brian Diaz? I mean, they clearly all have taken, and they've gone up a notch, maybe even more than one in some cases. But of the three, who surprised you the most and why?
I think, like you say, they've all come of age, and you know what Pioli's been doing is with all the players, he's absolutely getting the best out of what he's got, and I think that runs almost through the team. It's very difficult to look down that list of players and think, you know, you've regressed under Pioli. You know, when you mention Tonali, I enjoy watching him every time he plays. I think he's a superb player. Diaz as well, but for me, Rafael Leao, I just feel that he's coming more into that play. You see these developments sometimes with players when they first come into a league or a new team, and maybe they're a bit young and you can tell they've got all the talent, they're very quick. Sometimes maybe they're running into the wrong places, running themselves into trouble, wanting to impress, trying too hard almost. And it feels like the fact that he's got his head down, he's worked on his physique, and he's become much more direct and much more clinical, almost aggressive. And there's more purpose and directness to his runs. And I think now he really knows, I think he's just got caught. Now he's confident in Milan, and that's massive. You know, it's a big club, and for him to be there and being able to take up the reins, especially when, you know, they lacked the likes of Giroud and Ibrahimovic at the start, well, throughout bits of the season, I think he really stepped up. So for me, I just think he's a wonderful player. He'll continue to grow.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Lau because his attitude used to drive me crazy last season, but he's definitely really, really impressive. So let's talk a little bit about Atalanta. They did play in the Champions League yesterday. That was a fun game. They can't really seem to hold on to leads there. But look, I think, you know, a lot of people, the storyline is we have a three-pronged Scudetto race with Inter, Napoli, Milan, but maybe some people are sleeping a little bit on Atalanta. Look how quickly Inter bridged a 7-point gap and quickly. Do you see Atalanta potentially doing something like that? I mean, they could be getting a pretty big shot in the arm when Gosens comes back. I mean, there is, and we know how well they do as the season goes along. Do you think there's an outside chance Atalanta get in the mix for the Scudetto?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an outside chance because the firepower they've got is just incredible. You know, I love watching Pasalic and obviously Duvan Zapata, and you look at those players that they've got all through the team. And again, when you look at what I mentioned about Inter before, about taking a player out, you know, I don't feel even Zapata, even if you take him out, that what, you know, they couldn't cope in some way. They seem to be able to, as well, Gasperini seems to be able to just tinker with the system and alter it, and it just, players come in and replace players perfectly. It's just so uniform. I think the problem is, you touched on it there, defensively they just need to sharpen up. That I think, I feel though, they're getting there. Because that's the thing with Atalanta, and it's key. You know, Juan Musso, has he been in his best form? I'm not quite sure. You know, you're looking at those players and thinking, well, like you say, Gusen's coming back. If Gusen comes back, Musso just picks up the form and the back three, isn't it, most of the time, you know, start to just be a little more confident in a sense, and they sharpen that up, then up front, there's just a plethora of players who can score. So, you know, Atalanta haven't got to worry about that. But yeah, they just need to sharpen up. But that's something that Gasperini will be working on day in, day out. And look, you know, I think that, it depends. You could easily see them, if, say, for instance, we talk about Napoli, not performing very well in the next couple of weeks. You know, if obviously Maignan's coming back, but Milan could suffer a few injuries. Yeah, they could be up there, but I think it takes a few things to click into place, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Duvan Zapata, who's been sensational. He's on a big roll right now. Recently, Alex and I did our updated over-unders. I picked them as the best competition for Immobile to win the Capocannoniere race. I think Immobile has to be the clear favorite. Do you think Zapata is his best competition, or do you think someone like Vlahovic or maybe someone else is going to be in the mix with Immobile for the Capocannoniere?
Oh, I definitely think that, look, you know, when you're looking at those players there, who are in the mix. I mean, yeah, he's certainly going to be one of the ones. I mean, you can't really say anything at the moment. Well, Arturo Mobley obviously is going to be up there. Dusan Vlahovic, well, depends if he's there after January. But yeah, if he is, then I certainly would, you know, put him in there. He's just an absolute joy to watch. He's different level. But when you look at some of the others, do I expect that João Pedro is going to be up there or Giovanni Simeone? No. Potentially Dzeko, but I wouldn't think in Martinez, but you wouldn't think that Berardi is going to continue that form, which leaves Duvan Zapata. And when you know, any player that Bonucci says is the hardest player he's ever played against, you've got to take your hat off to him. I mean, he's just so robust and quick and just technically good. I mean, the goal last night was fantastic. He just so well taken, and he's got this sort of, I was talking about confidence before, but again, he seems to be one of those players who's just loving every moment of it. And again, you know, it's almost like, okay, if Atalanta concede two, he's going to go and score two. You know, it's he's got that ability, and it's great to see him as well. You know, he's probably got the most, well, goal conversion rate's good. It's not probably as good as a few of the others, but it's up there. So I'd definitely say that Zapata has got a chance of finishing top scorer. There's no question.
Excellent. Okay, so I feel like the teams we talked about so far are kind of the top tier and said, yeah, they're in the top four positions. To be honest, maybe the odds are the order might change, but I think those are going to be the four teams at the top. So there's the next class of teams. So we had Juve, who yesterday did lose decisively to Chelsea, but in Serie A, credit where credit's due. They won two important games, kept two clean sheets against Fiorentina and Lazio. So there's Juve, Lazio, and Roma, and I am curious. I didn't put it on the rundown, but I have to ask you about Mourinho after. But how do you rank these three teams if you had to guess how they end up at the end of the season between Juve, Lazio, and Roma? It sounds like you think Juve might sneak back into the mix, but how do you rate them compared to Lazio and Roma, and how do you see Lazio and Roma versus each other?
Yeah, look, there's no secrets that my heart's lying in Milan, but my heart lies in Milan, you know, especially the blue half, should we say. But for me, you put Juve in that top tier. You can't, even on current form, you can never put them in the second tier. I just, I'm not going to get all funny about Juve all of a sudden, but I'm not going to start saying don't put Juve in the corner. But it's one of these things where I just see them as, even now in this process, I think they've had, like we said, a terribly difficult situation to deal with the Ronaldo leaving, the way they were set up to play. Basically, you know, it's almost like when he left, all the organisation, all the discipline, all the you know, the want, the will, the determination is sort of gone on this idea of spectacular football, better, you know, good passing in the Sarri, feeding the superstar in Ronaldo, which they did. And then he went, and there's a void. And the players almost started the season looking, you know, trying to play this ball into a black hole. And now he's got to start again. And I think it's wrong that he's criticised for defensive football when you're seeing some of the other coaches play with style. He's got at least another couple of transfer windows to have to work on this. And he's got to rebuild that team. And what he's doing at the moment, for me, is impressive because, yes, they've slipped up. And that was, you know, this is what he's dealing with. But he's slowly getting them to grind out these results. And Juve never used to start well in the campaigns. It was always a freight train getting going and going and going. So for me, that will continue this season. And I think we'll start seeing him start getting the best out of whoever it is, you know, whether it's Dybala or whoever. And I think we'll see a much more polished Juve by the end of the season, certainly in the Champions League. So I think the Juve will do a lot better. I think the club just demands it. So it will have to happen one way or the other. And then when you look down, yeah, the rest of the list, did you say Lazio and Roma, and was there one more in there? So just Lazio and Roma?
No, so just Lazio and Roma. So Juve, Lazio and Roma. So yeah, how do you see Lazio and Roma? We'll talk to we'll take Fiorentina separate after.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me. Lazio, I feel like I say the same thing about Lazio every season. And because it's true, and it's probably easy to say it because you don't see a lot of investment. I mean, when you see Simone Inzaghi take over from Antonio Conte, you can understand the appointment. And when you see Maurizio Sarri take over from Simone Inzaghi, you can understand the appointment. And so you're still not seeing like a huge, huge, okay, it's a different playing style, but it's not completely different. And so you're still seeing some of the same players, you know, featuring who you would have seen before. I do think that you take, when we're talking about players who you can't miss, if Ciro Immobile gets injured, then Lazio, for me, have a huge, huge problem. I just feel that he's so important to that club that they focus completely, everything around him. And you know, they literally cannot not have him in that squad. I mean, you look at the likes of Luis Alberto, he's another one, and Milinkovic-Savic. You know, for me, for years, irrespective of Sarri, you know, those players come out of the squad and you've got a problem. And those are the key three. I also think in goal they've got an issue with Pepe Reina. I don't think he's good enough. So, but they do produce results. If that squad stays together, then I think they could definitely make the Europa League. I'm not as confident on the Champions League. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I'll be watching Lazio with interest. And sorry, go on.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Mourinho. We know he's a very special to you, as he is to anyone that likes Inter and supports Inter. You also are someone who covers Calcio, so we know that Mourinho is the gift that keeps on giving, regardless of if he does well or bad. If you had to give a grade to Mourinho's tenure at Roma so far, what would it be and why? I know it's a tough one, and I put you on the spot, but I'm curious.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. So, you know, when I look at this, it's a split the mark. I mean, they're fifth in the table, but they've lost five times. You know, So at the moment, though, you know, when you look there, he's only a few points behind Atalanta in the Champions League places. So you could realistically look at that as a seven, but it's seven that could turn into three within a game. But that, and that's the same thing with Mourinho. You know, 1 minute you see, you can see this Roma team, and you're watching him, you're thinking, hold on a second, they look like they love him, the fans look like they love him, he's giving presents away to his players because he's such a fatherly figure. And you look at it and think, oh, this is superb. And the team's clicking, you know, and they're doing well in the table. And you think, yeah, this is going to work. And then all of a sudden, it's just, it can be one interview, one game, better glimpsed, and you just think, oh, my Lord, and everything's changed. And that sort of 8-9 you're looking at suddenly go down to a 2 because the toxicity, there's no grey. It's just black or white with him. And he's, but 10 out of 10 for entertainment. I mean, the Instagram in itself gets a 10 because he's just genius. I mean, he knows how to... I feel like what Mourinho's doing is, when he was at Inter, as you well know, he took all the pressure off his players by fighting with referees. And I feel here like he's... Because everyone accused him of being miserable, you know, and he's got this reputation now. I feel like he's just creating this sort of brand image of Mourinho that people are focusing on at all the right times. You know, I mean, I can't believe that, you know, he has one result and the next thing, oh, look, I'm eating pizza on a train. And he gets all the focus away. So, yeah, look, Roma, really, really interesting. I'm really, I think Dzeko's a big loss. I think it really is. I think they made a mistake with that, as we've talked about. But I'm really interested to see Tammy Abraham's development because,
yeah,
as an Englishman myself, you know, his work ethic, wants a win and talent, is spectacular. And I know he's been hit and miss so far, but I really think if they can get him scoring, then I'd fancy Mourinho's team, unless he makes him implode, I'd fancy him to do well.
Yeah, look, I like Tammy. I think he's had a lot of bad luck for sure. And I do agree with a lot of what you said on Mourinho. So let's talk about Fiorentina. I think they've been definitely one of the funnest teams in Serie A. Their win against Milan, probably the signature win for the season so far for them. Italiano has been excellent there. Do you see a scenario where they can finish above any of Juve, Lazio, or Roma? Or do you think, you know, they are a very strong eighth place team right outside the top seven? Or do you see the world in which they can sneak in above any of these three teams?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it, with Fiorentina? Because you can watch them some games and they're just fantastic to watch. And other times, you know, they just don't quite get it together. Italiano's just doing an amazing job. And so you feel like from personal note, you feel like the vibe around the club's really, really good. I was talking to Charlie Celentano on the radio yesterday, and he's saying that Rocco Commisso is 11th in the Forbes list, which surprised me. I didn't know that. And so this is why he can almost afford to play hardball. He's not silly with his money. You know, he's not silly in the way that he spends it, but he has done the training ground at Fiorentina. He is creating that sort of more of a stability. And one of the things he's really keen to do is not sell off his key assets. But then you look at the amount of clubs and the money that's involved with Vlahovic, and it's going to be very difficult for him not to, especially his contract where it is, you know, running down. I think if they can keep hold of him till the end of the season, or in a miracle, make him sign the new contract with a proviso that maybe goes the year after, yeah, I think they could really press into the Europa League spots without a doubt. And, you know, if Mourinho's Roma implode, or, you know, Lazio lose Immobile, like I said, then yeah, they certainly could do maybe a bit better. But it all depends on that January window. I mean, David, you probably know a lot more than me, but, you know, if they can keep until the end of the season, that's going to be massive.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Let's close looking at the bottom of the table. As always, Richard, wonderful talking calcio with you. I know you have, you do like Genoa as well for a lot of reasons. The connection to England, they're one of the historic clubs in Serie A. You've been covering Serie A for a long time. They've been a lot of fun under Preziosi. A new era has begun. I thought they looked okay in the game against Roma, but in general, what did you make of Genoa getting a pretty sexy hire in Shevchenko, who in my mind isn't just a big-name former player? This is someone that's actually achieved a decent amount as a coach. So what do you make of this hire? Are you excited for what he can bring to Genoa?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a good coach with, you know, good connections, a good idea of what he wants to do. For him to be back in Serie A, I like the fact that he's gone to Genoa, so he can make his, you know, make a stamp on it, make it his own, not associate himself maybe with Milan like we've seen other ex players do in the past. When I look at Genoa's lineup as well, you know, sometimes it worries me because half the players in there, you think, okay, there's some real promise, the likes obviously of Ravella, and you look at, I still think Sirigu's one of the best goalkeepers in the league sometimes, you know, and but then you look and it is a bit thin. I do worry a little bit that they, well, my key thing for this, they need to back him in the window and actually for once spend some money, because I keep saying this season after season, but you can't stay up with Goran Pandev up front, but then he keeps proving me wrong. So he's, I think I'll be saying this in 6 years' time, but he just keeps getting them goals. But they are going to need to address the squad, and the balance is a bit wrong. I mean, obviously, I want to stay up, as you mentioned before, but I think it'll be a tough job. But I would like to see them take shape under Shevchenko, for them to have a bit of investment, have a good window, and obviously get some identity back in the club.
Yeah. So let's close on Cagliari, who I think, you know, of the non-top teams, definitely the most disappointing. You look at their squad, they definitely have quite a bit of talent. I think you could maybe even make the case they are the 9th, 10th best team in Serie A quality-wise on the team. Are you surprised at how poor they've been? They've had multiple managers in this calendar year. At least they get a point against Sassuolo. Do you think they're doomed, or do you see a world in which they can get back on track before the season ends?
You think they should be able to get back on track, but sometimes it just seems like it's not happening for them. It's sort of they have the belief. I mean, you know, Ja Pedro is scoring goals, and Pavoletti's always a threat. You know, the likes of Strootman may be past his best, but he's still a quality player. You know, and Cranio in goal. I mean, you can't argue with that. And then, like you say, Diego Godin, Hernandez, people like that at the back. It's the good players. They should be higher up. When you look at that table, which we're talking, you know, when you say are they going to stay up and go down, I mean, you're looking there and thinking, Genoa with that squad, you kind of get it. But Cagliari, you think, no, surely they've got a better squad than Spezia. They've got a better squad than Genoa. And obviously, they've got a better squad than Salernitana. So on that basis alone, they should survive. But it's the mindset. And at the moment, that mindset seems to be all over the place.
So, Richard, I can't thank you enough. What a great way to kind of go around the league. If you enjoyed listening, Richard, here, check out all his outstanding work. Gentleman Ultra with Fiorentina, Football Italia. For those of you here in the U.S., as he mentioned, he is on radio here on Sirius XM, usually the show with Charlie Stelletano. A lot of great stuff, Richard. It's always wonderful to chat calcio with you, and I look forward to doing it in the new year. All the best to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. Always enjoy coming in here. And David, you're an absolute star in everything you do, so thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thank you, Richard. Always a great pleasure to hear him talk Serie A. Before I go into the weekend, there's a lot of good movies that I saw recently that I wanted to share with you. Kind of different type of movies. Let's start with King Richard, the new Will Smith movie about the Williams sister. Really, really good. You don't see sport movies quite like this as much as I would like. Was very well done. Obviously, it's a real story. If you know anything about Venus and Serena Williams, you kind of know where the movie's going. But look, Richard Williams, their father, I always thought he was like this crazy dude. They definitely picture him in a more nuanced light. I thought Will Smith was superb in this. You almost forget that it's Will Smith. I think they hit a home run with the two young girls playing the Williams sister. This one focuses more on Venus. I definitely think they're going to do a sequel on the Serena part, especially because the actresses were so good. But kudos to Will Smith. He's on a big tour. He has an autobiography coming out. I think he's kind of trying to get into the second phase of his career after all the big blockbuster science fiction things, maybe doing a little bit more serious stuff. So kudos there. Very good movie. It's on HBO Max. You can see it in the movie theaters. You can see it at home. I think this movie you can watch at home. It's not like Dune where you really should see it in the movie theaters. Good movie. This is a movie everyone would like. It's a crowd pleaser. Has a lot of good beats of a sports movie. So that one's very good. Belfast, really, really excellent. I was very worried, and I put that in air quotes, that Belfast would be kind of like Roma. So, you know, black and white movie about the director, about him growing up. Roma was Cuarón, and this is Kenneth Branagh, who's been in a lot of the Nolan movies. Nothing like Roma. Very light, funny movie. Yeah, there are some serious parts on the Protestant Catholic issues in Ireland, but a very light movie. Another crowd pleaser. The grandparents are superb. Judi Dench is excellent. The kid, superb in this movie. Very light movie. I definitely think that's going to be a big contender for the Oscars. And then the last one is House of Gucci. I saw this on Thanksgiving night. Before Thanksgiving, actually, I should say, on the day that it came out. So I really like this movie. I was surprised by the reviews. Like, I fully expected it to be campy, a parody. I really wasn't taking it seriously at all. I've read, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, this would have been a great movie with Scorsese. But look, and I know Wolf of Wall Street definitely has a lot of comedy moments, but it's not really like a parody. And to me, House of Gucci is really more a parody, campy movie. Kind of like Will Smith, Lady Gaga's awesome because, you know, I feel like people that are that famous, it's kind of hard for them to get lost in a movie role. This much more than A Star Is Born, Lady Gaga kind of gets lost in her character. She's excellent. Al Pacino is great. Jeremy Irons absolutely steals the show as Adam Driver's dad. I thought Adam Driver was really, really excellent in this. To me, he was probably the best part of the movie. But Jared Leto, unrecognizable as a bald dude. Really, really fantastic every scene. So I really liked it. It's a little bit long. It's 2.5 hours. People made a lot about the accent that Lady Gaga uses, but everyone in the movie talks that way. I think they kind of agreed to doing this accent to make it sound like it takes place in Italy while in English. Very good. For me, it's a movie that spoke to me a lot because I grew up in Italy kind of around that time that the movie takes place. So I really like that one, but you have to go in knowing that it's campy and a parody, but a lot of laughs there. So there's some good movies there. More great movies coming out. Hoping to see Licorice Pizza this weekend and the new Joaquin Phoenix, Come On, Come On. So I think there's a lot of great stuff out there. You know, if you want a break from football, those are movies I recommend. So as always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll talk to you next week.